Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about John Sayles' 1988 film, Eight Men Out. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
What's up, Busher?
Busher. What is that term? All right, well, I'll ask you when we get into the actual discussion of the movie, but
spoiler alert, I don't know.
Okay, all right. Well, that answers that question. Okay, so if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I have got the character name game for this week. Are you ready for the name? Yeah. You ready for this? All right, here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still playing this.
Volume 27.
All right, here we go. The character's name for this week is Sack Lodge. Sack Lodge.
Sack Lodge. Okay.
I'll be thinking about that, and at the very end of the episode, you'll come back and have a chance to guess. So, let's go ahead and do another edition of In My Netflix or Up My Queue.
Yeah.
I've got a couple selections here. And
I hear there's been some debate about the theme song.
There has, yeah. We received a comment about...
Hateful one, I'd say.
About the comment, or I'm sorry, about the theme music for In My Netflix. And just to show that we're down with the listeners, we are going to eventually change that. We're going to get rid of that theme song and replace it with another one. But this will be the final hurrah of the current theme music for In My Netflix. So
contact us if you want a copy, an MP3 copy of the theme song to have on your iPod.
Right. Yeah.
We can provide that to you.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. If it's just if it's become such an integral part of your life that you can't live without it, I will be more than happy to email it to you. So, anyway, all right. Here, let's roll that music and get this thing started. All right, so welcome to another edition of In My Netflix. I'm your host, Ben. Joining us today will be Tyler. So, how's it going?
Oh, hi, Ben.
So, for those of you who have never listened to this part of the show before, I've got a few selections here. I'm going to present Tyler with two options, and he's going to have to decide which of these is currently in my Netflix queue. So, let's get started. Round number one. Which of these is currently in my queue? Deliverance or... Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Currently in your queue?
Yes.
I'm going to say, well, I'm pretty sure you've seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and you're going through this mode of seeing movies you've never seen before that everybody talks about, so I'm going to go with Deliverance.
You are correct, sir. Nicely
done.
Nicely done. Your powers of, what was that thing that Sherlock Holmes does? Deduction. That's it. Yeah.
That is it.
They've served you well today. All right, so round number two. Here we go. Dances with Wolves or The Ruins?
Oh, The Ruins. Ruins. It's Dances with Wolves for the same deduction method that I did in the previous round.
Incorrect. It's actually The Ruins.
What's The Ruins about?
It is a horror movie. I believe it's from 2007, and it's like a bunch of kids go to... they're on some sort of vacation or something, and they go to... I don't know. I heard that it was... What's that?
Every time I hear vacation, kids going on vacation, I think Troll 2.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Glorious. Anyway, I heard The Ruins was a lot better than, like, the trailers made it indicate. It's supposed to be, you know, actually very well done, so we'll see about that. All right, so round three.
Is it a prequel to The Cave?
It is not, but it sounds
starts
kind of...
The Ruins, and then it goes to The Cave.
It does sound similar. Okay, so round three, here we go. 28 Days Later, or Spellbound?
that a Disney Channel movie?
I can't tell you. This happened last week, and I was questioning what the movies were, and you wouldn't let me know, so...
Hey, that's right. 28 Days Later I just saw recently. Pretty awesome. I actually saw 28 Weeks Later before I saw 28 Days Later.
That makes no sense, but okay.
Spellbound. That sounds pretty goofy, girly, musical-y, so I'm going to say Spellbound.
Well, it's none of those things, but yes, you are correct. It is
Spellbound. Yeah.
It's actually a documentary about a spelling bee. Kids in a spelling bee or something.
Just watch the spelling bee.
Right, yeah, I mean, I guess I could, but anyway. Alright, so the fourth and final round. I don't dish out points like you do.
I have all of them, I'm sure.
Right, everybody played.
Round 2 was worth 0 points, so it didn't really affect my score.
Yeah, exactly, okay. You're making up the rules as you go. Alright, so the fourth and final round, here we go. Is it Pee-wee's Big Adventure or The Dead Zone?
Herman calling Mr. Herman. Oh, you haven't seen it yet, so you don't get the reference.
No, I don't.
It's Pee-wee's Big Adventure, then.
It's not, actually. It's The
what?
Dead Zone.
Aw, you haven't seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
I have not, but I've not seen The Dead Zone either. And pretty sure Christopher Walken's in that, and I'm going on a little Christopher Walken kick right now, as we'll discuss in Media Consumed. But
awesome, because yeah. I love Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
It affected
my dreams from the ages of like 4 to 25.
Okay, wow, that's very recent. Well, yeah, you were 2 and 2, I guess. So, yeah.
2 and 2.
Pretty much a wash. Just a lot better than my 0-for-4 performance
last week. Folks, go back and listen to last week's episode. Ben goes 0-4 and Mike here.
All right, so this is the last time you guys will hear this theme music, and we'll crank something else in there for
my
next
theme week. Music.
Bye-bye.
I randomly picked you and
slowly fade out into obscurity. Alright, so let's go ahead and move on into the Media Consumed section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what you've been watching, any sort of, you know, concerts or special events or anything like that, and maybe even books that we've read or video games that we've played. So, Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
You actually triggered my memory of going to a concert recently. I went and saw Neon Trees and The Roots. It played on 2 different nights.
Okay.
Neon Trees, pretty good. I don't know if you've heard of them. Have you heard of them?
I have not, aside from a post that you just wrote about them at the Solar Sentinel.
Right. Oh, good plug. Yeah. Yeah, I saw Neon Trees. They play this song called Animal in 1983, and The Roots are on Jimmy Fallon. I actually wanted to see them back in my college days, and one of my girlfriends, you know, made me leave early, so I didn't get to see them. But I have seen them, and The Roots are really awesome. So, you know, if they're ever in your area, check them out.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to see them at University of Florida when I was there, but it was like a free show or whatever, you know, because they were on like the college circuit or whatnot. And we went to the show. We got there super late, so the only spot we had was literally the back row of the dome where they play basketball. So like we could stand and touch the ceiling. We were that far up in the stands, so we couldn't even really see what was going on, and like the sound quality was terrible because all the speakers were directly above us pointing down into the crowd, so like all the music was just going down into the people who got there on time, and we were just shafted, so we ended up leaving early. But but yeah, I have seen them on Fallon, and they're definitely a good band. I've got a couple of their albums and stuff. So
Westlove is the man.
Yeah.
As for things that I've watched this week, I watched episode 1 of this John Cleese television show back from the 70s, like a British comedy called Fawlty Towers. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
I guess it was post, I don't know what the years of the Mighty Python crew show was on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, John Cleese came up with this show, and it's kind of like Newhart. I don't know if you ever checked out an episode of Newhart with me, but he owns like a hotel, and it's really small. It's like in the countryside, and you know, guests come in, and he's kind of a douche. He's rude. But he's always trying to get like upper crust guests so that he can make more money. But he treats all the guests like crap.
Mm-hmm.
In a comical way, so it's like, you know, I don't know if I can't tell if it's canned laughter or what, like Python was, but
right.
I watched episode one, and it was all right. I mean, it's a little ridiculous. He kind of overacts, you know, the John Cleese character, where he just kind of yells and gets really, really, really angry at times, but it's kind of comically angry. So,
mm-hmm.
I watched that. That's on Instant Watch if you want to check it out.
And what's it called again?
Faulty Towers, but it's not spelled like faulty. It's spelled F-A-W-L-T-Y.
Okay.
Like, that's his last name, is Faulty.
Gotcha.
But it works on so many levels.
Right.
Started checking out 30 Rock Season 1. I think I stepped into the 30 Rock, like, I don't know, Season 3 or 4. I think maybe Season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed out on, like, when it was first originally on TV, and Season 1 is on Instant Watch. So I started checking out those first episodes, and it's really different. It's kind of the same, but a lot of the characters aren't as ridiculous yet. Like, Liz Lemon, Tina Fey's character, isn't as, not obnoxious, but just kind of outrageous in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you watch an episode today, and she's kind of, like, crazy almost, mm-hmm. where she just has all these quirks and things. And in Season 1, she has quirks, but they're a little more, you know, believable.
Right.
Tracy Jordan, or Tracy Morgan's character, is a little less ridiculous. You know, the ridiculousness hasn't really come about yet. You know, it's still kind of a legitimate show.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying it's not legitimate now, but you see what I'm saying. If you watch an episode today and you watch an episode back then, you'll see some very differences.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Baldwin plays about the same character, and Kenneth the Page plays about the same character, but it was a little different than it is today, so I went back and I'm checking that out. Still pretty enjoyable.
Nice.
And finally, Where the Wild Things Are, the movie.
Yes.
I've read the book. You've read my review, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Quite the assumption, but it happens to be true.
Well, it's your site.
I know.
Did not enjoy that. Have you seen this movie? Have you seen this, Ben? Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's probably not worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I remember a lot of the build-up, and I wanted to see it just because of the book. And like, I liked the book when I was a kid, and I still like the book because it's the exact opposite of what this movie is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you'll see the review if you check it out, you know, crossing my fingers. just what the movie talks about and what the book is about, it's unnecessary why the movie was made this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the book is just simple. The kid has, like, a little imagination. He has some fun in his bedroom, and then it ends. That's it. He just has a little fun before bed. Makes a fort in his house, whatever. The movie is so pessimistic, so negative, so dreary that it's everything the book isn't.
Yeah.
And it's really, really unenjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I'm not
it's,
saying the quality of movie's bad, it's just the content is terrible. I don't know why whoever's idea it was, whether it was Jones or some of the writers or whatever, who said, hey, let's take this book and make it just the, you know, Let's just make the shittiest themes we can think of.
Yeah. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, this is a movie directed by Spike Jonze. It came out, I think, in 2009. And it's an adaptation of Where the Wild Things Are, the classic kids book. And, yeah, I mean, like I said, I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it's, like, the kind of, you know, like a flagship hipster movie, kind of. You know, it's, like, it's, like, one of those things that, like, and I think you alluded to this in your review, actually, where it's like the kids who dress in like super tight jeans and scarves and like wear full costumes of the little kid's costume in this thing. Like, people actually do this, and it's like this movie was kind of made specifically for them, really, I think is what you're trying to get at.
It was and you say an adaptation. It's adaptation in look and title alone.
Yeah, and then characters maybe, but not necessarily.
There's not really character development in the book. Like, that's the thing. It's just Max. He's just a kid.
Yeah.
Like a miserable being, and all the monsters are miserable, and everybody's miserable, and there's no hope. It's hopeless.
Yeah, well, I didn't see it not out of, spite or anything. I just didn't get around to it, but the trailer for the movie actually looked really gorgeous. The music and stuff by Karen O from the AAS, and I think like Arcade Fire had some music and stuff in there.
Arcade Fire had the song in the trailer, but it didn't appear in the movie.
Okay.
The
Okay. Well, yeah, the Arcade Fire thing was what I was thinking of from the trailer.
I thought Arcade Fire did the music along with Carinel, but that was in the one of the trailers.
I gotcha. But like the movie looked really awesome from like just the cinematography and everything.
Yeah, it looked good, and the monsters were really good looking. I mean, I think they mixed like, you know, I don't want to say puppets, but like life sized real, you know, sized monster costumes, and then they did like CG facial things, and it looked really good. But Go ahead.
I'm pretty sure the Jim Henson Company was involved in some capacity with that as well, but go ahead.
Really? Yeah, I'm not riding the movie because of the look or, you know, costumes or anything. Because in the review, I do say that was the coolest part of the movie. It's just the content, the dialogue, what happens, you know, what the movie is talking about is just dismal.
Yeah. Man.
Not worth a watch. Just keep your pure memories of the book as a child. Don't go and see this movie.
All right, so there
you
have it.
Unless you feel like crap.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm actually gonna take your advice on that and probably won't be watching it. So.
Already mailed you a copy.
Oh, damn you!
You're shitty like me.
Any other things you've been consuming lately?
No.
Okay. All right. For me, one thing that I wanted to talk about, actually, before I get to the movie and the Christopher Walken thing that I referenced earlier, there's a video game I've been playing lately, and it's called, I believe it's called NBA Live 2008. It's a pretty simple
title. Boom.
Tyler,
tell us history with that game.
Yeah, long-time listeners may know that you and I used to live together, and we played this game fairly regularly for a good portion of time. We created a team and went through the whole thing, you know,
It caused some extreme argument, but also extreme enjoyment.
Yes, yeah, there were
for a while we were at each other's throats because I could not play.
There were excessive alley-oops being thrown and excessive three-point shots and things of that sort. But anyway, the point of this is actually the season that we began, I just finished recently, like a couple days ago, and completely, you know, won out, won every game, and ended up winning the championship. But
wait, did we never win the championship?
We didn't, because we ended up moving like halfway through the season or something.
Oh, man.
So, The thing that I wanted to tell you, and this is probably going to piss you off, but it's funny, so I feel like our listeners...
Oh, no, you benched me.
That's exactly what I did. When we were playing, if people listening at home have to realize this, we created characters based on ourselves, like avatars of ourselves, you know, gave ourselves the looks and, like, all the skills and the whole thing, right? I mean, this is...
Everybody else we knew.
Yeah, right. This is probably something that two, like, 25-year-old... men should not be doing, but we did it anyway, and I'm not really that ashamed of it because it was a lot of fun. So
I think you're wrong there, but continue.
So we created ourselves, and Tyler, being Tyler, would almost exclusively shoot with his own player, like refuse to pass the ball off unless it was for some sort of epic alley-oop or something. Would just hog the ball with his own person. And
I wanted to be player of the game.
Right. Would end up like 20 points a game every game because he just wouldn't shoot with anybody else. Like, just ridiculous. So this pissed me off to no end during the actual time that we were living together and playing this game. So when we moved, I took all of the system and stuff with me since it was mine and continued playing, but I just benched Tyler.
In my face.
I benched Tyler for every single game in the remainder of the season to drop down his points per
Why
game.
Would you drop a gorgeous, awesome player like that?
Because every single person on our team had 99 in every in every category, including the big men who were 7'3" tall.
Yeah, I bet you had two centers playing when you could have put a point guard in there like me.
And all of our big men could shoot three-pointers as effectively as our point guards. So
and they only jumped like 6 inches off the ground. Done.
The entire concept of running out this entire season with a team full of perfect players was really nonsensical because you knew we were going to win every single game. It was just a matter of how.
Sometimes it came close.
Yeah, it was a matter of how we were going to win it. But anyway, okay.
Sometimes we didn't break 100. That was a loss in my mind.
It really was.
Now, are you going to play season? Are you going to play another season with that same team? Why, you're not going to delete them, are you?
I'm not going to delete them, but I'm not planning on revisiting that game anytime soon. It's taken up. I played all of whatever 83 games of it manually. So
that's epic, though. You need to continue that.
It is, but I'm not going to start another season because it just takes up so much time.
Now, if you bought NBA Live 2011. Or whatever's out now, would you be able to take that team into the new games?
I don't think so, no. I'm pretty sure you would have to create all of them again. Yeah. Okay, so on to the movie that I watched this week.
I want to know so much more about this NBA game now.
I've actually watched a bunch of films this week in particular. I'm still two behind at notjustnewmovies.com during March Madness, where we review every movie that we see. So I'll be able to get to those in the next couple days. But one that I wanted to mention is a movie called Nick of Time that came out in 1995, and it stars Johnny Depp and Christopher Walken. And it's on instant watch right now, and I was like, holy crap, this looks awesome. And the premise is Johnny Depp plays like a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill accountant who brings his six-year-old daughter into LA for some sort of business meeting or something. Christopher Walken and his partner in crime are scoping people out in Union Station, kind of randomly pull them aside and like coerce them into the back of this vehicle as if they're police officers and stuff. And then basically he hands Johnny Depp a gun and says, you have 90 minutes to kill the woman in this picture that I'm giving you. And then it's revealed pretty soon after that, that the woman is actually the governor of California. So like, it kind of sounds like a cool concept. Am I right? I mean, does that interest you on the most basic level, Tyler? Does that sound like something that you would watch?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
He, you know, Walken's personal friend of the show, I think.
I would love him to be. I would love that that was true. But so this movie is just so bad. I can't even tell you. I almost wish that we had chosen it to fully talk about for this podcast, because it's so bad and you and I could have so much fun just ripping this thing apart. But there are so many instances in which Christopher Walken is portrayed as this kind of like omnipotent being, almost like he just pops up everywhere. He basically, you know, he gives Johnny Depp's character this gun and six bullets and says, you have 90 minutes to kill the governor or else I'm going to kill your daughter. And then basically just kind of drives away. So Johnny Depp has to, he has to do this or else his daughter's going to die, right? So instead of fighting back while he has the chance there, when he is handed a gun and six bullets, instead of just loading the gun and shooting Christopher Walken right there, he just kind of wanders away in a daze and like gets really pissed off and like doesn't understand what's going on and he's really flustered and all this stuff. So immediately after this happens, he walks up to a police officer to try to explain the situation and says, officer, and then Christopher Walken pops out of nowhere and is like, if you even take
hey baby
up, I'm gonna kill you, like I'm gonna kill your daughter, blah blah blah, go back to work, go kill this woman. So that kind of thing happens 5 or 6 times within the first 40 minutes of the movie, which is just mind-boggling. I broke it down in my review. I think it's like on average one of these kinds of incidents in where Depp is going to tell someone and then Walken pops in happens every 8 minutes the first 40 minutes of the movie. That's insane. Like who does that? Why, what kind of writer would repeat the same thing happening 8 different, like, oh my, it's just I can't fathom how this script got through and how Johnny Depp read it and was like, oh yeah, this is good. I can understand Christopher Walken because he'll do just about anything anyone throws at him. He's like Samuel Jackson in that regard. But Johnny Depp, like, I don't know, I guess this was pre-Pirates Johnny Depp, so maybe he was a little bit more hard up for work or something. Anyway, I was blown away by this movie. Although,
Not in a good way.
And yeah, exactly, and not in a good way. And I think the one good thing about it is the Christopher Walken monologue. He has one in almost every movie that he's in, like Pulp Fiction, True Romance, The Rundown, Pool Hall Junkies, and of course, Nick of Time. And I'll play a little clip of it here, just so you guys can kind of get an idea. I'm not going to play the entire thing because it's like 2 minutes long, but there's a video of it in my review, embedded in my review, if you want to check that out. So here's just a little snippet to give you guys an idea of what I'm talking about.
There was this guy, big guy, Irish-Italian, red face, black hair, jolly son of a bitch. Wait a second. Nobody could make me laugh like him. He made a science of collecting jokes. I closed my bars together and I could count. And he was a pal. I loved the crazy Mick. I'm not ashamed to say that, but he was a fuck-up. He had his image of himself. And Donald was a con man, always trying to shave the edge. With nickel and dime. I'll always miss him. Tell me why.
Tell you why what?
Tell me why I miss him.
He's dead?
That's right. He is dead, but tell me why.
How do I know? I don't...
Tell me why he's dead.
Because you killed him.
That's right, I did. I killed him. He fucked up one too many times, so I put a bullet in his eye. Then I put two more into him just to make sure. Now, that was somebody I loved. I loved him.
So I'm cutting it off before it gets to the end, but you get the idea. So basically, the entire rest of the movie is written really, really poorly. But this one scene is just kind of awesome, as you heard, with Christopher Walken kind of going off and doing his thing, where he always tells these stories that, like, don't seem relevant, but in a roundabout way, by the time he gets to the end, actually have some sort of point as to what he's trying to do. So it just seemed like they realized, oh, crap, we just cast Christopher Walken in this movie, and he doesn't have a speech. We need to give him one. So they just kind of shoehorned it in. But yeah, I don't know. Stay far away from Nick of Time. It was directed by a guy named John Badham, and he did War Games. And I was like, oh, okay, this. I mean, I love War Games. This can't.
I love War Games.
Terrible, and it was. So
thermonuclear war.
Yes, I would say stay really, really far away from this.
Ben, right. You want to give a 21 fart salute for Lights Out?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah, I've never heard the phrase 21 fart salute. Is that from the Fraught cast, probably?
No, I made it up.
Oh, okay, all right.
I just replaced gun with fart.
No, I understand what you did. I just didn't. I've never heard that before.
Primitive.
TV show called Lights Out that I've talked about before on this show. It's on FX. Has just been canceled. So, yeah, we can play like a dur-dur-dur or something like that.
For lack of marketing, man.
You think
the lights out promos were just him getting hit and falling on the mat, and that was it. And then you said it's not even really about the boxing; it's about the characters. He just happens to be a boxer.
Yeah, I mean, it is about boxing, but there's not that much of it. Like, you know, the plot is driven forward by boxing and Lights, the character of Lights Leary, trying to get back. And, you know, this country loves a comeback and all this kinds of stuff. These are themes that are going through the show, and he's trying to, you know, get all this money back that he lost because he squandered it back in his days following his championship and stuff. But
just like Terriers, though, like just a marketing campaign that didn't let anyone know what the show was about.
Well, this one, I think, did a little bit better of a job at that, and it still failed. So I don't know. There was an interview with I think it was the head of production of FX, and somebody was like, hey, are you disappointed that, you know, are you kind of disheartened by the fact that your two most recent shows, Terriers and Lights Out, have both been canceled? And he's like, not so much. You know, this is a business. It's like, you know, if we put out four shows where two of them are successes and two of them are failures, the successes being Sons of Anarchy and Justified, and if the two failures are Lights Out and Terriers, I'm okay with that, or something. You know, I'm paraphrasing there, but I mean, I think he's on to something. Like, if Lights Out and Terriers are considered failures, those are two of Well, Terriers definitely is one of my favorite shows of all time, like probably top 20 or something like that. Lights Out isn't quite that high, but I do really like the show a lot. So it's disappointing, but it's also good to hear that the guy in charge of, you know, greenlighting shows like this is not completely discouraged by it. I think he's kind of aware that it does have a lot to do with the marketing, and it does have a lot to do with just being the kind of right show for the right moment. So I'm not necessarily giving up hope on future FX shows and things like that. There's actually one called Wilfred coming out soon. Have you seen commercials and stuff for this, Tyler?
Yeah.
With Elijah Wood.
I don't know if that's going to be funny, quote-unquote.
Yeah, I have no idea what the show's going to be, but I'm going to watch it just to see what it is, because I'm kind of curious. But
I prefer Louis.
Yeah, Louis good. That's coming back for another season, and Archer is always classic there too. So
yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our discussion of Eight Men Out.
We gotta see the Sox.
Baseball, 1919. There were no free agents, no million-dollar salaries, but there was a team no one could beat. The true story of the team they called the Black Sox. And the scandal that broke the heart of a nation.
Any bet against my Sox this series is a sucker bet.
You can find seven men on the best club willing to throw the World Series.
Come on, Joe! Sure Joe ain't in.
I ain't.
You want me?
You don't
want
to be stupid, do you, Joe?
Now you just sign your name right there, Joe.
I made an agreement with those guys.
A couple of Boy Scouts here, they made a deal.
The players are in now. What are they gonna do? Call a cop?
What you got it off for, Eddie?
Eddie can dump three games all on his own.
We don't get Eddie, we forget about him.
How many games does Mr. Seacott win for us this year?
29, sir.
You said if I won 30 games, there'd be a $10,000 bonus.
29 is not 30, Eddie.
All right, Eight Men Out was released in 1988, and it was written and directed by a guy named John Sayles. The movie is basically about the 1919 Black Sox scandal and the World Series and how they kind of threw the game and or threw the series, I should say, and the kind of fallout of that. So, Tyler, have you seen this movie before?
I've seen parts of it, yeah. So I've okay. And I know kind of what went on.
Right. What did you think about Eight Men Out?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good little period piece about baseball. It had a, you know, enough drama for the people going to see the movie for drama, good acting, plenty of, you know, old timey baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It looked, you know, pretty good. You know, it was a good period piece. So, that's always good to hear. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I liked it a lot too. And I think I was before, I started watching it. I forgot to check what year. That's something that I always like to do, is just try to watch, you know, look at what year the movie came out and kind of watch it with that mind frame. And I didn't do that this time and went back afterwards and was like, 1988, holy crap. Like, that movie looked like it could have been made 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really well done. And, you know, there's like zero special effects, like nothing. Well, I guess maybe there's like a couple instances of like a spinning newspaper just as like a transition or something like that. But there's not really any sort of defining characteristics as far as like what year the movie came out. It, basically, it's kind of a timeless looking movie. So I was a big fan of like the look of the movie as well as just the film itself. Because like you said, there's such a great cast here and it's very, very well acted.
Yeah. You know, it's the Chicago White Sox, right? They just called them the Black Sox.
Right. I said the Black Sox scandal. I didn't necessarily refer to them as – although – Okay. So I mean, let's start at the very beginning. The opening credits is something that I'd never really seen before. Have you seen this? Do you know what I'm talking about? The kind of blue, cloudy sky or whatever, and the camera like basically just pans around to all the credits. I thought it was really strange. I've never seen something like – I don't know. It's not like the most inventive thing that you've ever seen, but it was just something that kind of struck me as like, oh, wow, okay, I haven't seen this before.
Yeah, it looked pretty elementary.
Yeah, and then elementary, but also
baseball's played outside.
I guess so. So the way that the characters are all introduced, I really enjoyed. Like, they're all kind of cross-cut between the – like the fat cats and the press people up in like the press box, and then also with Christopher Lloyd's character, I believe his name was Burnsy in the movie, talking with his kind of minion about like looking at the different players and kind of evaluating them as being people that would be down for putting the fix on the World Series, basically. So, you know, on one hand, you've got these guys kind of looking at them from this way of like, oh, are these guys crooked enough to be able to, you know, kind of fall in line with our plans? And then you've got the owner of the team and all these guys kind of talking about the season and or the series and like what their expectations are and who's going to be good and who's not going to be and everything. So I thought, like, in any sort of conspiracy movie, you always need a really, really good introduction and like a clear delineation between these characters. You know, it's something we talked about last week with the Italian Job. Like, the original Italian Job movie did a really poor job of defining each individual character in this ensemble, and I thought 8 Men Out did a much better job at that.
Well, you know, John Mahoney played the manager. His name was
Kid something.
Yeah, Kid. He's famous for playing Frasier's father in Frasier, and he was also in Say Anything with John Cusack. Girlfriend, so that was kind of cool. Yeah, like you mentioned, the characters, like Shoeless Joe Jackson, he was kind of like a dummy, you know, not too bright, and you know, just kind of it gets kind of confusing because the players are going back and forth on whether they want to throw the game or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the series of games, like there were 9 games to be played in the World Series, which is a lot compared to today with 7 games.
Right,
people say it's a lot. you know, it was going back and forth, and you know, Chicago lost, and Cincinnati lost, and then you know, they started to wonder whether betting on the, or excuse me, they started to decide whether throwing the game was the best decision, because you know, I couldn't keep track of all the money and all the gamblers that were involved in this, because it was like the two guys originally, Christopher Lloyd's character and his minion, and so, but they needed the money to back up to pay these guys off so that they could make the bets.
Yeah.
Had to go to like a higher up guy, and they talked to his second hand guy, and went to other people to get some money because his boss wasn't putting up the money, and then the boss ended up putting up money, and it just got kind of confusing. And then I think a lot of the players didn't get paid up front like they wanted to, so like John Cusack's character or Bucky Weaver, he was one of the guys that didn't get paid up front. Like, he was in on the meetings, he knew what was going on, but he wasn't paid the $10,000 or whatever to throw the game, so he didn't throw the game. Basically, he knew about it, but he acted, you know, like he wasn't involved.
Right.
But he still didn't come up and say that there was, you know, crooked stuff going on, which is, you know, you have to think, like, this really happened. So it's kind of an interesting movie to look at and see, oh, what would you do in this situation? Like, these guys were playing baseball and they were like this close knit family of sort. And you know, they could have talked to the manager, Kit. Didn't like the boss who was, you know, underpaying them. The Eddie guy, his last ditch effort was to go and ask that $10,000 bonus that the manager or the owner said he'd get after winning 30 games and get that. So it was like, you know, a last ditch effort to kind of throw the game to get this money that he wanted. And so, and Kit kind of summed that up pretty well in the trial when he's like, you know, I can see where these guys, when they're underpaid and underappreciated, you know, can go along with something like this.
Yeah.
You know, like, somebody, they mess around with the wrong people, they say the right things, and you're like, yeah, I could probably do that. No one would know.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it gets into some dicey territory, too, because if you're like you said, it's a very close-knit group, and, you know, these guys work together all the time, and they hang out together off the field. Like, they establish that in the very beginning of the movie. They say that they're, like, a really, really close-knit team and stuff, and they hang out all the time. And if you're gonna be like the one guy who doesn't go along with it, you know, that's kind of a tough spot to be put in.
Yeah.
So,
and there were just so many aspects of the film that were kind of cool. Like, you had the gamblers and the players, and then there wasn't so much like players and their families, although there was some. They didn't focus on it completely like some movies may nowadays. They'll have, you know, they'll focus more on the player and his family than the player and the game and the business, which is kind of what this movie focused on. But there was also, like, the sports reporters who were up in the box. Like, you know, the one guy was like, let's do separate scorecards and, you know, we'll write down the plays we think are fishy and then we'll match up and see which ones,
yeah,
you know, we saw the same play, and like they had the big, they had the picture of the team, and they were like circling the guys that they thought were crooked.
Right.
I like that aspect of it. And then, you know, 1919, what else was going on? I mean, you were out of the war, World War One. You know, nothing really exciting was going on. This was probably like the most exciting thing. You know, the World Series, Chicago was winning. You know, they were going to beat Cincinnati, and then all of a sudden this controversy. You know, of course people are going to keep their eye on this stuff. You know, there wasn't really anything going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool to see it from a viewpoint, you know, us living in 2011, where it's like, you know, baseball's exciting, but it's not, you know, what it was back in the early 1900s.
Yeah, it's not like a pop culture phenomenon, really.
Yeah, you know, kids looking at their cell phones instead of, you know, these kids, like, these were their heroes. Like, when I was a kid, it was Michael Jordan, or in some kids, it was, like, Wayne Gretzky and other, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. as far as sports idols. And, you know, even in the late 90s, Mark McGwire was pretty big, especially, we're from St. Louis, so Mark McGwire was huge, you know, physically and...
You know, right. In public relations stature or whatever.
but yeah, like back then, you know, even into like the 50s and 60s, baseball players were like the big stars. You know, that's what kids were, you know, they had the lunch boxes and they talk about them. And, you know, these kids looked up to these guys. And then all of a sudden it was like they kind of lost confidence or a lot, you know, the kid drops the famous line to Shoeless Joe Jackson. And it's, you know, you're just kind of, you see that as well, you know, where it was kind of, you know, you take this institution that's held on such a high pedestal, and then you kind of see this kind of happen, and you're like, I guess baseball, you know, wasn't as great. And that's kind of what they did at the very, very end.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
Where they're like, well, we got to keep the, you know, the legitimacy and the, you know, kind of the pureness of baseball and the baseball organization by letting these guys go because they're crooked, you know, even if they're planning on throwing the game, even though they weren't found guilty in court, you know, even talking about fixing the game and not reporting it to the manager or the owners or anything, you know, we're not going to keep you, you can never play baseball again.
Yeah. It's a
tragedy, really.
It is. And I was kind of surprised to learn that that was the instance that caused the first commissioner of Major League Baseball to be kind of installed, I guess, in the system. I'm not like as big of a baseball fan as you are in general.
I'm not even that big of a baseball fan.
And yeah, I'm not necessarily familiar, like,
you know, I know
kind of intimately familiar with this part of history and things of that sort. And, but yeah, it was kind of cool to see like, oh, that's why there's a commissioner of baseball. That's why this guy, you know, was hired to kind of lay down the law across all teams to prevent something like this from happening again. So on kind of a historical level, that was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it's a good history movie.
Yeah, it really is. And I think, I was looking up a little bit of like the real life, parallels and stuff, and like how well the movie did in kind of portraying real life. And I think it stuck pretty close to the real events. You know, a lot of times movies will just be like based on a true story, and then it'll just like wildly, you know, every other scene or something is just made up for dramatic purposes. But this one, from what I can gather, doing some kind of cursory research, this one did a pretty good job at keeping it mostly factual, I think.
Yeah, the saddest part was when Weaver, John Cusack's character, tried to clear his name every year until he died.
Yeah.
Like, that's just sucks when you're thrown in with these guys and the courts won't recognize you as, like, a separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're accused of this crime and, you know, you're found not guilty, but you've still been accused of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that your name is kind of, tattered and tainted for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to get into the Hall of Fame when you know you have a name like that.
Right. Yeah.
That's what a lot of things are going on in baseball now with like the steroids controversy. Pete Rose was kind of gambling back in the 70s, and a lot of people have called for his Hall of Fame recognition, but others have said, well, you know, the rules of the game, you know, don't bet on yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we could get into that, but you know, it is kind of a trending topic, especially and with the NFL strikes too, because the players, I mean, God forbid they make any more money than they already do, but you know, they feel that they are the product and that they should be paid more than these owners, and it's back and forth. So
Yeah.
Sure, they're not as underpaid as the White Sox were back in 1919. I'm pretty sure $40 million should be good enough, but
right.
You know, they just trash talking these guys back in 1919, where it's like paying them a living wage for throwing or winning 29 games in the season.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point, because like there's a part where David Strathairn's character, who plays David Strathairn, who plays Eddie in the movie, the pitcher, he's kind of talking. He says like the real conspiracy is that the players are the ones who are being punished, while all of the owners and stuff are just like laughing it up, dividing all the profits, you know, behind closed doors and stuff. So
right.
That, you know, that kind of parallel to the NFL thing, especially, is still relevant, I think.
Yeah, when there's no players, there's nobody coming to the game.
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, funny. we're the people that everybody comes to see. There's no game without us. So,
And $40 million is probably enough.
Yeah, totally.
Player game.
It's a game, for God's sake. Like,
you play 10 games a year. Is that really that hard? We go to work every single day. You can't play 10 games in 1 year? Jeez.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be good. Look at the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think there are, like, you know, training and a kind of off-season stuff that they
do. But really, you don't have to be that great. You just have to make it through.
Right, yeah. No,
you get a retirement.
Generally, I'm right there with you on this matter. So, the cast, you know, I mentioned David Strathairn, who's great as always. I mean, that guy is just, like, so quality. Even I know him mostly from The River Wild with Meryl Streep, if anybody's seen that one. It was really good. And he was also in Good Night and Good Luck, that George Clooney movie where he played...
The River is Wild.
he played Edward R. Murrow in that film. But I think he was, like, up for an Oscar for Best Actor or something, if I recall. That was back in, like, I don't know, 05 or something. You know, not just him, like, this cast is full of that guys, you know, like, people that you recognize, like, the minion to Christopher Lloyd's character that we mentioned earlier. He was the guy who was the parking garage attendant in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Did you make that connection?
No, I didn't.
The guy who steals Cameron's car and they go, like, joyriding. Spoiler alert for Ferris Bueller.
No, I remember the scene. I didn't make the connection, though.
Yeah, there's the guy.
And then they try to reverse the odometer in his garage.
Right.
Don't even get me started.
Okay. All right. Laugh it up. Laugh it up.
No, I'm seriously. We could go on that all day.
Actually, speaking of Lights Out, one of the characters is. Let me see if I can find his name here.
Donald Logue.
No, that was Terriers. his name is Bill Irwin. He played Eddie Collins. He is a character named Hal Brennan in Lights Out on that show on FX that I mentioned earlier. So, and like the guy who plays Rothstein has been in a bunch of stuff. The guy who is kind of one of those big wigs that's responsible for sending out all the money through all these secondary guys, played John Locke's dad in Lost. Like, there's just, and like you said, John Mahoney, there's all these
Blank really, Check too.
Who?
The guy that, one of the guys that gave out the money was in Blank Check. He was the banker that the kid went to. And the guy was like, he's like, juice. And the kid's like, no thanks. And he just gives him $1 million in cash because he cashed a blank check.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
A good career, I'd say.
And like you mentioned, what's his name? John Mahoney. And Charlie Sheen and Michael Rooker. Like, these guys have been character actors for years. And, like, I mean, Charlie Sheen, let's not even get into that. But, like, last week when we announced this movie, we're like, the John Cusack and Charlie Sheen film from 1988, like, because I'd never seen it before. I had no idea how small of a role that they played. And that was actually something that I really liked about 8 Men Out, was that it is so much of an ensemble movie that, like, not really – I mean, Cusack maybe just a little bit, but only towards the end is the one who kind of rises and becomes, like, the more prominent character out of the group. But I thought it did a pretty good job of keeping the balance, you know, between everybody. What did you think about that?
Yeah, everybody gets their time in the movie, which is really – it's really good writing, because, you know, you don't focus on one character and somebody is, you know, in the shadow of this big actor or whatever, actress. But everybody kind of gets their time on screen and gets to portray. And everyone acted fairly well, so it's like everybody gets to portray their acting ability that they get to portray their character for enough time for the audience to become familiar with them. So when they appear later in the film, you're like, I know who that is. I know, you know, no one is undersold or underrepresented.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Christopher Lloyd's character, you know exactly who he is, what he does. You know, he was an old baseball player. He's one of the, you know, and Mahoney's character was, you know, he's the manager. He has an opinion. You know, we got to see his acting. And a lot of it was in the trial, you know, where everybody kind of took the stand and gave these, you know, mini speeches on behalf of the team or against the team or whatever. And,
yeah.
You know, everybody, even the little kids get enough time to say, oh, that's one of those kids.
Yeah, and the kids, too, like, that's something that you and I pretty adamantly agree on, that most of the time kids in movies are kind of worthless. But I think in this one, you know, that there could be kind of an exception to that rule, because I didn't really find them annoying. It, like you said, with the balance and everything and spreading it across and keeping making sure everybody gets their face time, they didn't concentrate on the kids enough for them to be annoying, you know? So it was just like they kind of popped in here and there, and especially with Buck Weaver, had that kind of mentor relationship that you had alluded to earlier.
Right.
The production design was really cool. You know, you're talking about it's good to see a good period piece in the very beginning of this part of the discussion. And I think that's totally true. And I think that also, you know, goes to add to the timeless quality of this movie. Like, you really, I mean, I never would have guessed that this movie was made in 1988, basically, based on the way that it looks. You know, it really does look like it could have been made a couple years ago, and I think the production design is a huge part of that. The costumes look great, the, you know, the paintings on the walls and all the stuff, like just the architecture of the city of Chicago and stuff. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm almost positive a lot of it was shot, you know, in Los Angeles on back lots and studios and stuff like that, but they did a really, really great job of kind of creating a feel of the time, if not a really good feel of the city, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, even down to like the baseball gloves.
Yeah, totally.
I've had my hands on a really old baseball glove before.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of cool.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting transition. What did you think about, like, the way that baseball itself was portrayed in this movie? Because, like I'm talking about, like, the game sequences and stuff. Because, you know, we've seen there are a ton of baseball movies out there. And some of them show the game parts better than others. Where did you think this one stacks up, maybe, in comparison to other baseball movies?
I thought it was really good. I mean, I've watched a lot of baseball movies, and this one didn't undersell the game at all. As far as like the look of the game itself, I mean, I don't think there were a lot of videos. Well, maybe there were probably some films chronicling baseball, and you know, a lot of it is a lot different than it is today. You know, kind of just the way they hit the ball and the way they, the bases themselves are just bags.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of the look of the game was, I think, really on par. Of course, I'm not from that time, so I can't really say, oh, that's how they played baseball back now. But just kind of, you know, the way they swung the bat, and you probably don't think about it, but these actors probably had to watch films and had baseball experts on hand to say, oh, you're not swinging the bat right, or that's not how, you know, Shoeless Joe swung. He ran like this, or he caught like this, and, you know, just kind of that kind of stuff. I'm sure it was pretty important to the film, again, because of its period piece status. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the whole movie was about the conspiracy surrounding baseball, but they could have gone a different route and just done the conspiracy and just shown, like, maybe a few clips from the game. But you really do feel that the baseball game plays just an integral part in the movie as – you know, the drama does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think all the guys on the team are pretty convincing, like, physically and stuff. Like, they all look like they know what they're doing. There's not any one person that stands out as being like, oh, wow, everybody else seems to have a good grasp on this, but this one guy, like, does not belong in this scenario, you know? I thought everybody did a pretty good job as far as that stuff goes. John Cusack gives a speech at one point. This was, I think it might have been my favorite part in the movie. He's talking to the kids, and he gives a speech about, you know, how he's like still, it's still really, you know, he still has an appreciation for going and playing in front of people and stuff. You remember the speech?
Yeah.
Where he's talking about, you know, it feels like everybody's there to see you and stuff, and you know, when things are going right, there's this groove and it feels like the bat kind of just fits into it and you feel the ball give a little bit. Did you play baseball as a kid, Tyler?
Yeah.
Okay. Did I mean
that was pretty bad.
For me, that's that whole speech just completely like brought back this wave of memories of me playing baseball as a kid, because that was just like, that's such great writing, that particular monologue. I thought it just really did a great job of kind of capturing the feeling of what it's like to, you know, like hit a home run, basically. Like that's just what it kind of conjured up. It was just, it did a really, really great job with that, I thought.
I never hit a home run, so.
Oh, bummer. That sucks. Were you more of a, like an RBI guy, or what's the stolen bases?
No, I was the guy that got hit and took his base.
Okay. Did you?
I played outfield, so I was just in it for the game itself. I wasn't in there to be the superstar.
Gotcha. You were just the love of the game.
Sure.
Yeah. Nice.
Although the bruises hurt.
Yeah, I stopped playing baseball when I was 12 years old because they put us in a league with 15 and 16 year olds, and these guys had
mustaches. League I was in. Yeah, that was the same league I was in, and I was like 13. I was playing with like kids on the high school in high school.
Yeah,
I was in like 7th or 8th grade, and I was like, you know, taking balls to the hip because they were going like 90 miles an hour, and I was, you know, I was just out of my league.
Right.
Excuse the pun.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy baseball. It's kind of, you know, it's part of my childhood, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I grew up with my dad who loves baseball, and I wish I was a better player, but, you know, I still like playing, just kind of to go out and, like, you know, shooting hoops on just kind of off the chance. But,
yeah,
you know, I like playing baseball. I like playing a lot of sports, but baseball is one of those that I kind of hold close because it was such a big part of my childhood and because
sure.
it kind of shaped the relationship I have with my father and all this
mm-hmm.
emotional crap.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, actually, another movie that is almost explicitly about the relationship, the relational aspects of a son and his father that involves baseball is Field of Dreams. Yes. And that movie also, you know, features a lot of these same characters, obviously played by different actors and stuff, but Shoeless Joe Jackson plays like a huge part in that movie. And I think it's Ray Liotta actually that plays that character in that film. What did you think about the different, because like I said before, I'm not like really familiar with this whole scandal and stuff. So when I saw Field of Dreams, that was my introduction to this scandal and all of this stuff and these characters and Shoeless Joe Jackson. That was the first time I'd ever heard of him and stuff. So seeing him in a different movie that's like more specifically about the entire team and how he kind of fits into that. I mean, Shoeless Joe in Field of Dreams is kind of like the representative of all of the group of these kind of ghost baseball players, really. But what did you think about the different portrayals of Shoeless Joe?
Yeah, they're two entirely different movies. Although they concern the same team and the same era of baseball, it was two entirely different feels. Like, one is a baseball movie. The other one is like a personal movie. Field mm-hmm. of Dreams is, you know, Kevin Costner's relationship with his dad, who he never really knew. And, you know, spoiler alert for Field of Dreams, you know, the ghosts request a baseball field in the cornfield, and like he builds this baseball field, and so the ghosts start coming back and just kind of playing around, and blah blah blah. Field of Dreams, he gets to have a catch with his dad, the ghost, although the ghost doesn't know it's his son, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's more about the personal relationship as opposed to the team itself, although mm-hmm. team is involved.
Yeah, and I thought Shoeless Joe was like a much more tragic figure in 8 Men Out than in Field of Dreams, because they really concentrate on the fact that he's really not that intelligent, and he, you know, signs his name with like a crudely drawn letter X in this movie, and it just, you kind of feel for the guy as like him not being educated and not having any real skills or anything other than being an amazing baseball player. And when he talks to, I think it's his wife or some other character, and she's like, yeah, it is his wife. She says like, what are you going to do if they don't let you play? And he's like, I've got to play. Like, I don't, you know, he doesn't have a backup plan.
All he knows,
basically. So,
all he knows is baseball.
Yeah. And that was kind of cool to see at the very end, even though, he's in, like, whatever it was, you know, minor league team, and he changed his name and stuff. Like, he still was able to do what he loved. So, I mean, there's, like, a little bit of triumph.
I don't know if that was him, though.
Oh, it definitely was. It was.
I don't know. I couldn't tell if it was him or not. Like, no, I thought maybe they were just kind of, they thought it looked like him.
No, it totally was him. They were, like, the people in the crowd didn't know, but John Cusack was there to watch Shirts
right.
Joe. So Cusack wouldn't have been there if it wasn't.
I didn't know, because it didn't really look like him. He was kind of, I don't know, he looked different.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 6 years later or something like that. But
yeah, I like how 6 years later no one remembers any of the people from the scandal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there was a little kid that was asking the question. He was like, who is that? Whatever. So, I mean, I think that maybe answers a little bit of that part of that question. But
I just like how people forget big, huge things.
Yeah.
Within 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't recognize Buck Weaver. I mean.
Yeah, seriously.
Baseball fans.
Yeah. They're like.
So it's hard to recognize Sammy Sosa nowadays.
I guess I haven't seen Sammy Sosa since like 2002, but
nice.
I love how they're sitting in the stands with Buck Weaver and they're like, yeah, just one of those bums from Chicago.
Yeah, nothing but a bum.
Bad mouthing everybody.
I love how they talk in the 20s.
Yeah.
Nothing but a busher.
Oh yeah, I was gonna get to that. What do you think that's referring to? Bush League?
Like maybe.
A minor league team, or was that slang for minor league back then? I don't know. Because I think the origins of Bush League are now like, because it's like a lower tier NASCAR thing. Am I right about that?
Busher, a horse.
Oh, are you looking it up?
To a horse. Nope, that's the official name of the horse, Busher. Yeah, I'm looking it up. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I mean, it could be Bush League, or it could be Busher term
1920s.
Bush League was also used as an adjective to signify anything cheap or inferior. No, that makes sense. Sure. So I guess it is like the Bush League, like minor league.
Okay, all right.
Okay, here it is. Bush League, Bush, Busher. The Bush Leagues were the minor leagues, a usage that first appeared in 1902. A busher was a minor league player. Bush League was also used as an adjective to signify anything cheap or inferior.
Okay.
This is from Baseball's Greatest Hit, The Story of Take Me Out to the Ball Game by Andy Strasburg, Bob Thompson, and Tim Wiles.
Oh, thanks for the citation.
Citing sources.
Nice. All right, well, let's just do some closing thoughts on 8 Men Out. You can go ahead.
If you love baseball and you love good period piece movies and maybe John Cusack, check this out. Even if you don't like John Cusack, check it out. If you like good movies, check it out. You know, basically, all in all, see this movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really liked it a lot, and it doesn't feel... It's 2 hours, but it's just like... I thought the pacing of it was really well... really well done, and it didn't feel long and drawn out. You know, a lot of times with these legal movies and stuff, as soon as it goes into a courtroom, that everything just kind of grinds to a halt, and you're like, all right, come on, just get through this. Let's figure out what's going on. But they kept the courtroom stuff down to probably only, you know, 20, 30 minutes max of the movie. And the rest of it is all, you know, baseball and really kind of kinetic and stuff. And there's a lot of good elements of good films here. You know, you've got like a conspiracy theory movie, you got a baseball movie, you got a courtroom drama movie, you got like a bunch of these different things kind of all tying in. And it's very, very well written and really well executed and very well acted all the way around. So totally enjoyed this one and would highly recommend it. So Tyler, why don't you rev up the old Apple II and let's think about what we're going to be talking about next week.
Yeah, dusting off. Well, I don't know why I dust it off every week. We're using it pretty prominently nowadays. But so let's pull that lever and see what we're watching next week. Oh, wow, a pretty recent pick. One that is shrouded with mystery, perhaps? The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Okay.
Starring the esteemed and sorely missed Heath Ledger.
Yes, I believe this was his
well
last...
Well, it's Johnny Depp, and I think it's directed by
Terry,
one of the Monty Python guys.
Terry Gilliam, yeah. Right on, cool. That is available on Netflix. Watch instantly. So check that out. If you guys want to listen along next week, you can send us an email, let us know what you think of, you know, Eight Men Out or Dr. Parnassus or anything like that, any movie that we've discussed here. You can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Also, call and leave us a voicemail. Do it. We haven't had one in a while. 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes, which I would highly recommend, and leave us a review. That would be great. You can check us out on Facebook, and we are on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We have two new followers this week, one of which is at Lunar Antics and at Reyes Jam. So thanks for the follow there, ladies and or gentlemen. And yeah, so
wait, no emails?
No emails this week. Yeah, nothing. We're done. Yeah, so since we don't have any emails, let's go ahead and wrap up the character name game. So the character for this week was Sack Lodge. Any guesses as to what movie that character might have come?
Sack Lodge. Yeah, I could probably take a gander.
Go ahead.
Is it a character from The Watchmen?
It is not. Mm-hmm. It's Sack nothing.
Lodge. Is it from Meet the Fockers?
It is not. No, it's
from the Meet the Fockers franchise.
No, you're getting a little warmer though.
Oh. The Wedding Crashers. Boom.
Yes, Wedding Crashers. That is correct.
Bradley Cooper's name. Wedding
yeah, I figured that one would be fairly easy considering.
That tastes like a sack lunch.
Considering I don't know any other characters in the history of film with the first name of Sack. So, yeah, Bradley Cooper, of course, stars in the movie Limitless, which just came out in wide release this past weekend, which I also actually reviewed, and you can find at notjustnewmovies.com. So,
March Movie Madness still going on.
It is.
We're going to beat the record because I have 4 more reviews lined up, and last year was 29.
Yeah, we're definitely going to break the record because I've got a couple more up my sleeve as well, so we're gonna jump up.
You want to give a preview of the movies you're gonna watch?
Well, the ones that I've already watched that I'm going to review definitely are Treasure Planet and The Ten Commandments, the old 1956.
Get your hands off me, you damn dirty Egyptians. couple movies I'm going to watch this week: Raw Deal with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Uh-huh. Going to open and close, hopefully, with Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
At least first week versus last week.
Mm-hmm.
The Terror of Mechagodzilla, which I believe is the sequel to Mechagodzilla.
Wow.
Spoiler alert. Jason Goes to Hell, which is the 7th installment of the Friday the 13th franchise.
Of which you've only seen the first one, correct?
I've not seen 2 through 6. And then Assault Girls, which, if you're unfamiliar with that, type in Assault Girls into notjustnewmovies.com, and there's a kind of, what would you call it? Not an opinion, but a commentary on the trailer for Assault Girls. At one point, there's this huge dragon, and someone just shoots it with the gun, and it just evaporates. So, good times all around there. So, if you're involved, watch the movies Ben and I are going to review, so you can...
Yeah, enjoy the reviews to their fullest potential, right?
Yeah, because a lot of people, if you haven't seen the movie, are like, I'm not going to read the rest of this.
Yeah.
So it really helps our page views.
Yeah, of course, because we're all getting paid and everything.
It goes to hell.
All right, so let's go ahead and just tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet this week. Tyler, let's start with you.
You can find me at the Solar Sentinel. I recently posted a music breakdown article. You can find me... Destageddon. You can find me at notjustnewmovies.com, and you can find me walking the streets of Kabul, Afghanistan at sometimes.
Excellent. Well, be careful there. People can track me down on twitter.com/benpears, geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, and on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com, and they are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And we will be watching The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus for next week, and you can feel free to check that out and listen along with us. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys next time.
Later. I got the blues, yeah. all the money that I